Thank you. Good morning. Yes, I want first of all to acknowledge our funder and the very large research and implementation team that's been associated with this project. So this project was funded by Health Canada via an organization called the Mental Health Commission of Canada. I'm just curious, is anybody here not an American? Oh, is anybody here a Canadian? Oh, so we do have a few Canadians. Okay, so some of you know what the Mental Health Commission of Canada is. So Cameron Keller is vice president of the MHCC, and he's been kind of for the past 3 years approximately overseeing the project as a whole with the assistance of Catherine Hume. Prior to Cameron, it was Jane Barker. Paula Goering, unfortunately, couldn't be here. This is kind of very unfortunate. Paula has been the mastermind behind the study as a whole. She has led it, I would say, exceedingly well. Unfortunately, she is now battling with cancer. Able to work half time, but not well enough to travel to Boston. Approximately 40 investigators from across Canada. I'll tell you a bit more about the design of the study. There were site coordinators as well who helped to sort of represent the commission with the sites for implementation issues, and then research coordinators. We had lots of people with lived experience. I won't talk about that anymore, but it was an important part of the project. And then also, kind of for service and housing providers. I don't necessarily represent those of the funders. So, I mean, this was a huge project. This is just a tiny fraction of the people involved. So what I want to do is talk a bit about the Canadian homelessness context, a bit about what is Housing First. That's probably going to be redundant for most of you. And then I'll introduce the trial. So what were its objectives, its design, sample characteristics, and I'll talk a bit about implementation and then conclusions. So you might think that Canada, being a somewhat more liberal country than the United States, would have its act together on homelessness. But actually, that's not the case. It's generally seen as kind of a country where we haven't done a very good job with the homeless. We don't even have very good counts of the homeless. And kind of I've heard various estimates ranging from 150,000 to 200,000 homeless at some point during the year. 30,000 on a given night is kind of one estimate, but the truth is we don't really know. And this is in a country of 35 million, so slightly more than 10% of the U.S. population. So why is it a problem in Canada? Well, there's kind of social conditions that are not very favorable. Actually, internationally, Canada's child health outcomes are pretty poor, at the bottom on some indicators. We have high rates of functional illiteracy, which it's nearly half from what I understand, which means that kind of people are not very well prepared to keep good jobs. Also in the 1990s, there was a big push to reduce the Canadian budget deficit, which led to disengagement of the federal government from subsidizing affordable housing. And private market rents have been going up as kind of house prices generally have risen in Canada, as they have for the most part in the U.S. Our disability and welfare benefits are there. They're easier to get actually than in the U.S. since the Clinton reforms, but they remain relatively modest in most provinces. And our provincial systems in Canada is a bit different in that there's kind of less of a federal role in these programs than in the United States. It's really very much provincial policy that determines what is in place in a province. And we have, for example, one province, Alberta, that has a 10-year plan that dates back to 2009 to end homelessness, but it's the only province that has such a policy. Most of the provincial systems are centered on traditional emergency response. So with the predominant continuum of care model, which you're all familiar with, coupled with non-integrated care, so the shelters, community centers, healthcare, are all disconnected. We are, by and large, not very far along in the development of electronic health records and so on. So a bit on what is housing first. Well, of course, at its simplest, it's just you provide housing directly without the person having to meet preconditions such as around sobriety. So there are two dimensions of, at least two, there's actually many, of course, aren't there? But we can talk about two dimensions of programs to help homeless people obtain housing. There's like the continuum of care with preparatory steps and then immediate access to housing. But then there's also a choice as to, are you going to direct people toward congregate housing? And there are, of course, a number of programs that are labeled as housing first that involve reliance on congregate housing. Or you can favor scattered site apartments, which is the Sam Simberis's approach as developed at Pathways to Housing in New York City. And incidentally, kind of Sam, I'm not sure exactly what happened, but Sam let us know only on Friday that something had come up and he couldn't be here today. So as it was implemented at Pathways to Housing, and as we very much try to do in our five demonstrations that I'll be talking about in a moment, housing first involves immediate access to housing, usually subsidized scattered site private market apartments, although in some cases people who could not handle that we directed towards supervised housing. So housing and support functions are managed separately but work together for the client. We help clients in the pursuit of their own goals, harm reduction, proactive in trying to engage clients. And there's now, as part of this project, we developed with the collaboration of Sam Simberis, a fidelity scale for Housing First, which we used in the different sites and programs. So I don't want to spend a lot of time on a literature review on this, but there's clear evidence that Housing First leads to increases in stable housing, not surprisingly, and also clear evidence for cost offsets in terms of shelters, ERUs, hospitalizations, and jail nights. For other outcomes, such as substance abuse, at this point it's less clear. The studies are, of course, quite heterogeneous and give somewhat different results. So what this large project aimed to do was to evaluate the feasibility, effectiveness, and cost-effectiveness of Housing First in Canada. And maybe I'll say just a couple of words about kind of how this study came to be, because I heard a few comments about how surprising it was that a country would have been willing to fund such a large study. The impetus, actually, was the Olympics in Vancouver. And someone in Health Canada realized that the world would be focusing on Vancouver, which has a very severe problem with homelessness. It's the worst in Canada, although it's getting better now. And that led to a conversation with the chair of the Mental Health Commission of Canada, Mike Kirby. Could we do something about this before the Olympics? Which then led to conversations with Paula Goering, which then led, in a very short space of time, to the design of a 5-city randomized trial of Housing First. So that often it's politics, isn't it, that leads to such decisions. So because it was funded by the Mental Health Commission of Canada, the focus needed to be on homeless people with mental illness and not homeless people in general. The decision was also made right at the start because that seemed, maybe Stephen can correct me there, but my understanding is that it just seemed like the most promising model to intervene with homeless people, to use the Pathways to Housing version of Housing First. And also, rather than just limit to people with more severe mental illness needing assertive community treatment, it was decided to also offer services to people with more moderate needs who would be served by intensive case management teams. This then became an adaptation of something that was already happening in Toronto called Streets to Homes, for which there was very limited evidence of effectiveness, but which, from the limited evidence and sort of observation in the field, clearly was assisting people to leave the streets and be housed, but not necessarily with rent subsidies. Another decision was to make this both a research and a demonstration project, with the two playing as equal a role as possible. Paula told me at one point that when she was designing this, people told her, mostly Americans, I think, that, well, you really have to choose. Was this going to be a demonstration study with a research component, or was this going to be a research study with a demonstration component? And she said, no, I want it to be both. And also, an important decision was to have a common core design across all the sites, but to give enough money to each site that they could test site-specific variants and do their own site studies, which of course would be more motivating for site PIs like Stephen Huang and myself. So it was a large investment, $110 million, and actually if you were to cost this in the way studies are costed in the U.S., it would be more because all these many investigators involved in this study are funded through other sources than this grant. In Canada, there's just no soft money for investigators. It's all other university or investigator award sources. So a very large study. It worked out to about 15%. My pie is probably not quite accurate here. 15% for research. So five cities across Canada. So again, there was a bit of a political consideration here in wanting to spread the study across the country, including Moncton, which is a quite small city, just less than 100,000 in New Brunswick. But that was also to test the intervention in rural settings. So just to give you an idea of the research questions, I don't think I'll read all of that, but for example, what is the effectiveness, including cost-effectiveness, of a proven housing-first approach to care in comparison to care as usual for unaccompanied homeless adults with high needs living in urban settings? And then the next question is with moderate needs. And then there was also an important qualitative component. This was very much a mixed method study, or I should say, to be fair, mostly sort of parallel methods. There hasn't been as much interaction between the methods as we would have liked. In the end. So how do the personal stories and lived experience of participants in the intervention and control conditions differ over time, and how can those stories inform the practice, service delivery, and policy implications of the study, with particular attention to gender, Aboriginal, and cultural differences? So, and then also, what are the critical ingredients of the Housing First model and modifications needed to effectively implement in different sized cities? So our target population was adults, normally age 18, 19 in Vancouver, homeless, absolutely or precariously housed, presence of a serious mental health issue, oversampling to ensure we had at least 20% women, it ended up being about a third, total plan size 2,205. So just very quickly, I really should move fairly quickly through the rest of these slides. So we have kind of the Vancouver site, which also tested an experimental comparison between congregate housing and scattered site housing, the results of which are just starting to come out. And that's because Vancouver has favored the kind of low barrier housing, congregate housing sort of model to this point. The Winnipeg site is characterized by a very high number of Aboriginal people. It's about 60% of the sample. And there's one of the intervention arms that has traditional healing approaches embedded within it. The Toronto site, Toronto is the most multicultural city in the world, I believe. And there's one of the intervention arms that looks at kind of how an organization where the staff can speak 19 different languages can be more helpful. In the Montreal site, we tried to do a comparison with social housing, which, because of resistance from our city, turned out to be impossible. And we had a test of IPS, individual placement and support, supported employment, within the study, but we won't have the time to talk about the results of that. And then a Moncton site. So just to give you an idea of how it was operationalized, so people were recruited all over the place, a lot of people in the field. There was often, at least in Montreal, there was an informal pre-screening, and then a screener. If the person is eligible, they're invited to do the baseline interview. All the data are entered in a computer that's connected to a server, and they're analyzed in real time so that the system determines whether the person should be classified as high need or moderate need. And then if they're classified as high need, they're randomized. In the case of Montreal, it was just to housing first or treatment as usual. If they were moderate need, it was, we actually had two different types of ICM providers. So this actual design varies by city, but the overall scheme of kind of needs assessment preceding randomization was common to all the cities. So I don't think I'll go over the details of the eligibility criteria. Stephen is going to go over that. I think I've said enough about the interventions. We had a whole bunch of quantitative questionnaires that were administered at baseline every 6 months. It ended up that for about half the sample, we did the final interview at 21 rather than 24 months in order to economize on resources. With all that money, we still were running out near the end. And then we had qualitative interviews on a 10% representative, almost random sample of all the experimental groups. So these were narrative interviews that were done shortly after baseline and about 18 months later. So life story, high points, low points, turning points at baseline, and then similar questions 18 months later. We ended up having 2,148 in the sample, a bit more in the housing first, and really pretty good follow-up rates with a bit of differential attrition, but not terribly so. So our population is most two-thirds male, early 40s on average, 95% single, a third have children, 44% have finished high school, 93% unemployed, average income less than $685 per month, average longest periods homeless 30 months, typical total time homeless 5 years. So one question was, is it going to be feasible to implement this in all these different Canadian cities? And the answer turned out to be yes, it was feasible. We were able to house most experimental participants within about 3 months or less, often less. We found about 260 landlords across the country willing to house our participants. And we found that with some local adaptation, but not very much, support teams could be trained to function according to the Housing First model, though, as always happens, with varying degrees of success and difficulty. So to sum up, this is the largest ever, we believe, trial of Housing First, certainly the Pathways version of Housing First versus services as usual. The interventions and the research design were implemented successfully with collaboration of lots of landlords. People were housed quickly with good follow-up rates with moderate differential attrition, and the groups were balanced at baseline.